That's right. Good Tuesday. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are on the Game Nashville app as well. How's it going? Chase McCabe and Ryan Porth. Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, what's up?
What's up, Chaser? How are you on this this Tuesday? When you said Tuesday, I was like, isn't it Wednesday?
I actually thought the same thing. As soon as I said it, I was like, am I right on this? But I am. So this is good.
That's just the state of the times, man.
We are one for one. We're good to go. But, yeah, excited for another edition. Jordan Rogers of the SEC Network going to come on with us in about 20 minutes. So looking forward to talking to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, some quarterbacks. I mean, this is a pretty big quarterback class in this draft. So I'm curious to get his thoughts on that and some other prospects. So that will be a lot of fun. But speaking of the draft, we, you know, got to talk about this because it's going to be digital. It's going to be virtual. John Robinson had a press conference yesterday. He talked about it. It was before they were going to run that mock draft. And then I was seeing reports on Twitter that there were some bugs, there were some glitches. And I guess that's why you do the mock. That's why you do the test run. But, Adam Schefter tweeted yesterday, text from a participant on the NFL's mock draft that started at 1 o'clock Eastern. Mock draft today, already technical glitches with Cincinnati's first pick. Brutal. They probably selected the wrong quarterback.
Well, they probably picked Akili Smith instead of Joe Burrow, which would be so Cincinnati Bengals. Diana Rossini was on Go Look and Wingo this morning, and Diana Rossini said that after the first glitch with the Bengals that everything went smoothly after that. So I don't know if there was an internet issue in the great city of Cincinnati. I think that's another piece of advice for Joe Burrow. Get the strongest bandwidth possible in the city of Cincinnati once you start living there. But I think it's inevitable that Thursday night there's going to be something that pops up, and it's going to be phenomenal theater because we all know what's coming. And how ESPN, how the NFL handles it is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, they just don't know. I think that's what's going to be kind of fun about it is there's going to be so much unknown with it that you just at this point have to roll with it. This is the hand you've been dealt. And if everybody wants to have a draft, this is the way to do it. So I think, look, I just think this is what it is.
Yeah, but if you're the NFL, you have to have a plan in place if that happens. Like, what if the war room in Cincinnati, they're, you know, they lose all internet connection at the top of the draft? Well, there's got to be some sort of contingency, and the NFL can't be scrambling on the phone to get Goodell on the phone and say, all right, what are we going to do now? You know, there's got to be some sort of plan in place from the league.
Do you have the text guy? Do you have the guy that's like, all right, if things go bad, you have to text in our pick?
I think so. I mean, John Robinson made it sound like yesterday during his meeting with the media over Zoom that he's got an abundance of different phones. And we also saw the war room set up for John Lynch, the 49ers GM, who tweeted out a picture of it that even you would be jealous of, Chase.
Yeah, I saw that.
With five different screens, three different landline phones, and I'm sure he's got one or two different cell phones that he could use. So
I've tried to build my own war room here at my house. So
you have a war room in every place that you could possibly do work. You have a war room in your office. You have a war room at home.
I do.
I'm sure you have some sort of war room in your car when you're driving from one place to another, just so you don't miss anything.
It's true. I'm ready. I'm ready for any and all scenarios. and that's why I'm so good at what I do.
Like, there could be Zoom glitches, but I would be surprised if it got to the point where they could not make contact with someone with the team so that the team can make their pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been discussed since they put this in place. I mean, I said this yesterday on Darren Donick and Chase. It's not like they just decided this last week. At least they've had time to prepare and go through some of these scenarios. And you know, they had the mock run through yesterday, but they've done some testing. But as I also pointed out, and Ryan, you know this firsthand, how many times have we tested a remote for a broadcast, and then as soon as we go on the air, something goes wrong?
I know. It happens.
So that look, there's going to be something that happens. I hope it's with the first pick because that'll just be very Bengals and be funny.
Hmm.
But
or the Browns or the Jets, the Lions, any of those teams.
Even the Cowboys would be funny, and I'm a Cowboys fan. But well, here's the other thing too. How funny would it be? And I know that there's no way this is going to happen because of the backup plans that we just talked about. But if the GM is on the phone with the league, trying to make the pick, and it cuts out, and you only get the last name, and so it's like Davis. They're like, which one? They're like, and they select a kicker. It's like mm-hmm. that's the auto draft kicking in. But obviously, they're going to have contingency plans in place in case something like that happens. John Robinson, as we mentioned, did do a Zoom call with Mike Vrabel yesterday, which Mike Vrabel cut out of the Zoom call. So there you go, the bandwidth. But John Robinson was asked about his biggest concerns with this year's draft.
Well, I think my biggest concern was the ability to make trades and how that was going to go off. I think that I feel a little bit more at ease now that we've got the draft phone set up, and there's a lot of trades that get done via cell phone. Like sometimes, like in typical draft years in the past, where I'll text, you know, another GM and say, hey, are you going to pick here? Would you be looking to move? And they'll text me back, and I don't want to say you consummate a trade via text, but you at least get the ball rolling that way, and then you pick up the phone and call. So I think that style of business with being able to move around on the draft board, we'll still be able to do that.
John Robinson, the GM of the Titans, yesterday during a Zoom call, and that, you know, that's one concern that I had of, okay, well, how easy or difficult is it going to be to execute a trade? Because we see so many trades happening not only during the first round, but throughout the course of the entire draft. And, you know, technology has changed. Texting is a big part of how we communicate now. We have a text line for this radio station. So I can understand that being a concern for John Robinson, and it looks like that has been addressed.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that kind of goes back to our previous point of the different lines of communication that all these GMs should have in their war rooms. I mean, the fact that John Lynch had three different landlines, John Robinson alluded to different phones yesterday during his Zoom meeting, that the fact that they're not just throwing this together in less than a week to have all the IT individuals go out to the GM houses or the coaches' houses or the scout houses, I think that, to John Robinson's point, when they decided a few weeks ago that this was all going to be virtual, that was probably one of the first concerns that GMs had. And even Floyd Reese expressed some of that concern of how do you get a trade done. But I would expect most teams to be able to do this without much of a hitch.
Jordan Rodgers coming up at 9:20. We'll get his thoughts on some of the prospects in this draft. But, Ryan, I did want to hit on some of the things that John Robinson discussed when it comes to his actual football team, because we know that there are definitely some pieces to be acquired during this draft. They have some work to do for some holes that they want to fill. He covered everything from corner and potentially replacing Logan Ryan, which he remains a possibility. He has not closed the door on Logan Ryan by any means, but of course the draft is going to dictate what happens with a lot of those positions. But you and I have discussed, do they pick at 29 or do they trade back? John Robinson was asked on if it would be a big deal to pick in the first round or not.
No, I don't think so. I think from a football team, from a general manager's, and not to speak for Mike, but we're just trying to make the football team better. It doesn't really matter. And we tell these players when we hang up the call with them, we're like, it really doesn't matter whether you go in the first round or the second round or the third round. It does from a compensation standpoint on their rookie contract to say there was a first round pick. But what matters is that they help the football team win. And you really won't know that until we tee it up and kick it off in September.
Okay, so a couple things there. Number one, John Robinson, as Floyd Reese has pointed out, is brilliant at answering a question without answering a question.
I was just going to say the same thing. He learned from Floyd
that, and he has key phrases that he likes to use. That was one of them, make the football team better. And he always has to say the football team. You know, it's not just the team or the Titans. It's got to make the football team better. So he is a master at saying nothing, essentially. But with all of that said, I did like the line he threw in there that, you know, the only thing that really matters is the compensation for the player, and he's not necessarily thinking about that because he doesn't have to. They have the cap room that they can get the best players available to, as he says, make the football team better. And I love that strategy. That's why I think he's been very strong at drafting since he's been here.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt. And there were a couple different times within that press conference yesterday where he discussed or was asked about trading back or trading up. And he sounds like a GM who's completely open for business. And this goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, where you don't have a fourth round pick going into this draft, and you have a lot of different needs, some that we think still could get addressed in free agency. But for the most part, you're going to be leaning on the draft to build the depth of your roster. And the fact that you don't have a fourth, you have a first, a second, and a third, I don't think it would really surprise anybody if John Robinson went from 29 to 40 or 50 and accumulated a lot of different picks either this year or even next year. But that doesn't mean then he couldn't go back up into the late 30s or into the 40s. He's been notorious for doing that. I believe, wasn't it the Jack Conklin pick where he went from 1 to 16 and then yep. traded up from 16 to 8 with Cleveland?
Yep.
So
I mean, look, he's not a stranger to making draft moves.
Right,
I mean,
he's
just not.
Right.
And he's not afraid to do it. And that's one, you know, reason that I think he's been successful in building or rebuilding this team, this football team, that he's done over, you know, since he got here.
And one thing that was curious yesterday, so Floyd Reese did his first ever mock draft, his first ever public mock draft. And if you missed that, we tweeted it out last night, so you can go to our Twitter account at 1025 The Game to check that out. And when he got to 29, when it was time for him to make a Titans pick, he wanted to trade out.
Yep. That doesn't surprise me.
He and Jared had to push him a little bit to say a name. And then, you know,
oh, so Floyd, Jared wasn't letting him trade?
No, Jared was like, no, if you have to make a pick at 29, who are you taking? And they ultimately agreed that the 29th pick in the mock draft would be Zach Bond out of Wisconsin, the linebacker. But
Floyd didn't love it.
Floyd didn't love it. Yeah. And we all know that Floyd is very close to John Robinson. And I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, that Floyd has talked with John about this very thing, but even if they haven't talked about it, they think very alike. And Floyd was basically saying, if someone that you're not expecting doesn't fall to you, then you're trading out if you can.
You're going to take the best player available, and if that player is not available, then you trade back. It's so funny that we're having this conversation because John Robinson, of course, was asked about the potential of trading back, and I'm sure he said absolutely nothing.
Yeah, you're right. It's the lowest we've picked. I wish we were picking a little bit lower. But, you know, I think, you know, a lot gets made up of this, you know, how many first round grades or that. And I think at the end of the day, we don't necessarily get caught up on who's got a first round grade or doesn't have a first round grade. Do we have a vision for the player? Is the player going to be able to come in and help our football team? And are we going to be able to, you know, to work with them on a day in and day out basis and make them a better player and then make us a better football team? And we'll just kind of see how it goes. You're right. We've got to sit there and weather 28 picks. And when we're on the clock, you know, it's no different than any other draft where if the phone rings, you take down the potential trade and you kind of value that relative to the player you're thinking of picking. And can you get that player, if you have to slide back 7, 8, 9, 10 spots, do you think that player will be there? Or is there somebody similar that you like? Or are you better off just taking the player and not risking losing them? So all of those things and those decisions, you know, we've started to work through and we've talked through different scenarios. And as that manifests itself on the clock, we'll work through it.
I love it. He's so good at this. He talked for a minute, didn't say anything, didn't answer the question, but nor should he, because I don't think he knows yet. Do you believe, Ryan, before we get to Jordan Rodgers, that he makes the trade, if he trades, that he makes it before the pick or it happens when they're on the clock?
On the clock.
So you think he lets it? I do, too. I think he lets it play out.
Because it could come down to someone in the second round that doesn't have 30, 31, or 32 saying, all right, this player that we love is still available. We got to jump back in and get that player. And I think that's when John Robinson can trade 29 at an advantage. And perhaps, I mean, we've seen all the time when a team is desperate to go get a player that they love on a draft night trade, that they over trade draft picks. And you could get maybe a second and a third and a second next year or something like that, where all you're doing is dropping 10 to 15 selections. And we've seen teams trade up in the first round and give up their 20, you know, their first round pick the following season. So would not be surprised to see John Robinson wheeling and dealing like that.
Yeah. And he's always smart about it. So, I did find it interesting that we ran the poll yesterday of what we think the Titans will do, pick at 29, trade up or trade back. 13% said trade up, which I think that's about right. I really don't see them trading up. But 49% said they'll make the pick. 38% said they will trade back. So we will see the first round coming up on Thursday. When we come back, Jordan Rodgers from the SEC Network, he will join the show. It's The Rundown, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. It is The Rundown, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Jordan Rodgers coming up from the SEC Network in just a few minutes, Ryan. But while we wait on him, you brought to my attention, and then I looked this up, the comps that ESPN.com has with players in this NFL draft compared to former or current players. And I thought it was interesting that the very first one, they go with Joe Burrow, who is looking like he's going to be the number one overall pick to the Cincinnati Bengals, comparing him to Tony Romo. Is that because they both wear number 9?
I guess so. yeah, that comp from Mel Kiper saying, back in October after Burrow completed nearly 88% of his passes while shredding a good Florida defense, I said he reminded me of Romo, and not because they're matching number 9 jersey numbers, but goes on to say that Romo's presence in the pocket and the fact that Burrow may not have the strongest arm, but he has great touch, great accuracy, all of that, comparing him to Tony Romo, he felt was accurate.
Well, I find that curious, and I'm wondering what a quarterback might think about that comparison. So let's say hello to Jordan Rodgers from the SEC Network. Jordan, how are you, man?
What's going on, fellas?
You know, we're just hanging here in Nashville, enjoying the quarantine life, but we were just discussing this comparison that Mel Kiper has, comparing Joe Burrow to Tony Romo. What do you think about that?
You know, it's not a terrible comparison. I just heard you say that right before I came on, and I started to think very briefly. I think Romo has a bigger arm than Burrow does. I see similarities in their movement. You know, Romo could escape. He could make things happen. He navigated the pocket really well. Burrow does that as well, but neither are great athletes. I think it's still yet to be seen, though. And when I look at Joe Burrow, He's coming off one of the greatest college football seasons we've ever seen from a quarterback, no doubt. Does he throw with better anticipation, accuracy, eye control than I've seen in a long time? Yeah, absolutely. He's got some intangibles that you can't coach. But I'm still wondering why, and I'm still questioning myself, who is Joe Burrow really? Because I think a lot of times we like to term certain quarterbacks from certain offenses as system guys. Now, I'm not saying Joe Burrow is a system guy, but 2018 and 2019 were as different of college football seasons for a quarterback as maybe as I have ever seen. I mean, he was a different player. Now, look at this.
Agreed.
In 2019, LSU on 80% of Joe Burrow's dropbacks went 5-man protection. That was their bread and butter. They got 5 eligibles out. They used space. They had unbelievable athletes. And in the college level, when your third or fourth receiver is as good as LSU is, there's always going to be a mismatch somewhere on that field against defensive backs. Now, in 2018, they only ran five-man protection 18% of the time. Now, in the NFL, you can't run five-man protection 80, 75% of the time. Why? Well, teams are too good at man coverage. There's too many exotic ways they can get pressure. And especially when you're a bad football team like the Bengals, you have protection issues. So Burrow's not going to be able to take this offense that he flourished in 2019 and be able to replicate that at the next level. The offenses just don't work in that manner. So how much of last year was Joe Burrow and his ability to anticipate, which is elite, his accuracy, which is elite, but how much of that was Joe Brady and his influence in that offense to allow Joe Burrow to flourish? And is he going to get that at the next level? I think that's a big question mark. And I'm surprised at how many people are so willing to just quickly throw away that 2018 tape and say, he was so good in 2019, it doesn't matter. Five games against the top 30 defenses that he faced in 2018, he had zero touchdown passes, completed 52% of his passes, and had four interceptions. There is a big gap between Joe Burrow in a regular offense and Joe Burrow in Joe Brady's offense. And I think I'm still eager to find out what he really looks like at the next level.
You read my mind, Jordan, because that's exactly where I was going to go, because I think the biggest test for the Bengals now is going to be to find or try and replicate the best they can that system that worked for Joe Burrow last season at LSU and giving him the pieces to be successful. So what are some of those pieces? I mean, we know A.J. Green's still there, but what else do the Bengals need to give him to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, A.J. Green is a monster, and a healthy A.J. Green is one of the best in the NFL. And so I hope for him, and I hope for Joe Burrow that he continues or actually does stay healthy, because they'll need him. But the biggest problem, as I mentioned, you know, why is it easier in college to go five-man protection, that quick-man protection? Well, because your athletes, your third and fourth best athletes are better than the third and fourth best DBs in college. DB is one of the hardest positions in football. I think the second hardest position in football to play, especially at the NFL level. There's some good dudes on that side of the football. You go five-man protection in the NFL, they're going to man press, they're going to lock up, they're going to bring pressure, they're going to make you get the ball out in 1.5 seconds, maybe less, and that is difficult to do. The Bengals last year only did quick-man protection, five-man protection 50% of the time. So they're going to have to figure out how to protect Joe Burrow. Because, look, the reason quarterbacks are so hard to evaluate, it's not because it's necessarily so hard to understand if a guy can play the position, is accurate, has an adequate arm. It's that the situation dictates success. I mean, so they're going to have to find a way to play an open-style game while protecting Joe Burrow. That offensive line is going to be the biggest key to his success, as it is for any quarterback success, especially in the NFL, but he needs that. He's got the moxie. He's got the attitude to take on a situation like Cincinnati has, but can they put the pieces around him to help him be successful early is going to be that question that starts up front.
Jordan Rogers of the SEC Network here with us on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jordan, when you look at Tua, are there any concerns within his game outside of the injuries that would prevent you from drafting him?
Oh, it wouldn't prevent me from drafting him, but here's my concerns with Tua. And here's what I'll say, Tua and Burrow. If Tua is 100% healthy, I think there's a bigger conversation of who Cincinnati actually takes. The biggest separating factor for me between Burrow and Tua, just in their talent, is Tua throws off platform much better. With his feet in the wrong direction, three-quarter release, he's got that Rodgers-esque, I guess, for lack of a better comparison, not myself, the Rodgers-esque ability to make these awkward throws within the pocket. And that bodes well at the NFL because you have to do that. More than half the time, really, you're not in rhythm. Your feet aren't set when you're throwing the football at that level. My concern with Tua when I watch him on tape is that he got so used to being able to manipulate defenses that when it didn't work, he didn't move on in his progression. When he got in trouble in the national championship against Clemson, when he got in trouble against Georgia, it's when he would try to manipulate or move safeties And when he moved him and came to his throw that he had 99% of the time against every other team, and it wasn't there, he forced the football. So allowing or teaching Tua to play within the offense. He loves to create. He's great at creating those second reaction throws, those scrambles, those wow moments. But playing within the offense can be a quarterback's best friend. And for a guy that has been injury prone, he needs to learn to get to his third and fourth and dump the football off and not try to force those big time, those highlight throws every single time. I think that's where he got in most trouble. But his ability to manipulate defenses, his accuracy, his ability to throw with touch, I mean, it is second to none and equal to Burrow, if not better than Burrow at times. I mean, they're both right there in being two of the best I've seen in college in anticipating and throwing with accuracy and touch. So that translates to the next level. Both these guys just need a little more coaching for sure.
Before we let you go, Jordan, what is your outlook for Vanderbilt's Keyshawn Vaughn as an NFL running back?
God, I love Keyshawn. Man, to be that physical, to be that much of a bruiser in that size of a body, I mean, he's special. And probably the thing that separates him from other guys and that will bode well for him at the next level is his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. You have to do that as a running back. He's an every down back because he's physical enough to be in protection on a third down. He's physical enough to get downhill and run the football between the tackles. And he's great on the perimeter in the passing game. So he's going to be a steal. Running backs, you know, in this day and age, there's not a lot of value put on him. So he is going to be a steal wherever he goes in the draft, whether it's mid, whether it's late. He's going to be a guy that can make a big impact at the next level for sure. And very similar to a Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think, in the body type, in the playing style, in the physicality. So I think both those guys are going to have great careers at the next level.
Real quick, do you think Vaughn fits as a complementary back to Derrick Henry with the Titans?
Absolutely, for the reasons that I just said. I mean, Henry's a guy that'll get 80, 90% of the carries, but Vaughn's a guy that can still have that physicality in those between-the-tackle runs that the Titans love and will continue to do. And he's great in protection, but he's going to give that element of physicality yet complemented with the ability to catch out of the backfield on a third down. So I absolutely think he would be a fit, and he'd be a great second back to any workhorse a la Derrick Henry or anybody else in the NFL for sure. But that's a great fit.
Jordan Rogers of the SEC Network. Hey, it's always good to talk to you, and we'll have you on again soon. We'll break down a little more of Vandy.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jordan.
Jordan Rogers of the SEC Network does great work for them, and some good stuff there, Ryan, about – you know, good by you asking about Keyshawn Vaughn, because he continues to be a name that pops up as possibly being a pick by the Tennessee Titans. We will see. Injury concerns are there for me, but I would love to see Keyshawn Vaughn in two-tone blue. We will break down some of the things that Jordan had to say and much more here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page, brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Many local businesses in Middle Tennessee are still open and ready to serve you during these uncertain times. Help them out by visiting RockNashville.com for delivery, pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. Welcome back in to The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Jordan Rogers. If you miss any of our interviews, just head to thegamenashville.com. I wish we had a little more time with him because he's so in-depth with his breakdowns of players, but we asked about the top two quarterbacks and Tua and, of course, Joe Burrow, and you know, I think it's a very real concern with Joe Burrow because you have to find something wrong. You have to find concerns. The system is the one for me, and I think it's going to be up to the Bengals to try and replicate what Joe Brady did at LSU last season to find success with Burrow.
Well, it's not only the system, but it's the talent that Joe Burrow had around him.
Yeah, I mean, too.
Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Edwards-Helaire at running back. I mean, it was an embarrassment of riches. Randy Moss's kid. I mean, he's not going to have that kind of advantage in Cincinnati over the other teams in the AFC North or in the NFL as a whole. So Joe Burrow is going to have to be – for him to excel with the Bengals and for the Bengals to eventually – win with him, either the Bengals have to surround him with a ton of talent, which they don't have right now, or B, he's going to have to be one of those quarterbacks that makes the talent around him better. And I kind of feel like he's going to be somewhere in between there.
Yeah.
I don't know if Joe Burrow is going to be one of those elite franchise quarterbacks. He might be somewhere in the ilk of a Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan, you know, that second tier quarterback that has flashes of greatness, but at the end of the day, he's a good quarterback that needs great talent around him.
Right. You know, Carson Palmer comes to mind is another one of those, and I know his, you know, the early days in Cincinnati, it looked really good, and then things fell off, and then we know.
Well, and mostly because of injury.
Yeah.
That injury against Pittsburgh in the playoff game where his leg was basically shredded, I mean, that was a game changer for him in a Bengals uniform.
So I will say this about Joe Burrow, and I go back to yesterday. We were talking about Peyton Manning and the advice that he gave him. So many times you see a quarterback especially get just thrown into the frying pan right out of college. I mean, they get drafted, top five pick. You are the day one guy no matter what. There is no competition. Or if there is, it's all just for show. And we all know that by week three, that guy's probably going to be in there. And the team is bad, and they're going to do a lot of losing. Now, with Peyton Manning, his rookie year – not many people remember it because of his career, but his rookie year was awful. I mean, it was a bad team, and he just had a very bad year. But he was able to shake that off and turn it into a Hall of Fame career. Will Joe Burrow be able to do that? Does he have the makeup to know that it's going to be a rough go, at least this season, maybe even longer, but does he have the build to be able to shake that off and not let it shake his confidence and bother him? That's what I'm waiting to see. Now, that goes into what we were also talking about with the Bengals and trying to build something around him.
Sure, absolutely. And the Bengals aren't going to be able to get him the pieces within this offseason or next offseason. The Bengals aren't a team that spends gobs of money in free agency. They typically rely on the draft to get a lot of their better offensive weapons. So I would think, you know, next year in the first couple rounds, they are drafting some skill players to put around Joe Burrow. Because at that point, even AJ Green may no longer be on the Bengals. So AJ Green is a liability when it comes to staying healthy.
Yeah.
So Joe Burrow does have a lot of obstacles in Cincinnati to overcome to become a franchise quarterback.
AJ Green could be the wild card in all of this, though. Let's just say, you know, with a miracle, he actually does stay healthy. A healthy AJ Green is a dangerous AJ Green, and now you have a quarterback the caliber of Joe Burrow, or at least the caliber we think he can be. That could be a dynamic duo. But as you just said, AJ Green, he didn't play at all last year because of the injury, and that could be a good thing. That could be a bad thing. We will see, but if he can stay healthy, then that's a key piece in my mind that can help with the confidence and can help with the production.
That is a huge if, though.
And, huge if.
Because when you're a receiver dealing with ankle or foot injuries, then, you know, he's also had some hammy injuries over the years, too. So, and A.J. Green and Andy Dalton were also at their best when they had a really good running back, or a really good running game, I should say, when Jeremy Hill had those one or two years where he was really good and he was paired with Giovanni Bernard, then they had threats out of the backfield that forced defenses to respect them, and that opened up a lot more capabilities for A.J. Green. Also, you know, when Tyler Eifert was really good as a tight end before he had all his injury issues, when they had that collection of talent, that's when A.J. Green and Andy Dalton were at their best. So if the Bengals can find a way to manufacture a similar collection of skill players, then I think they might be respectable, but it ain't going to happen in 2020.
Yeah, it's going to be a long process. And that's one reason why, and I know they're not going to do this, but I kind of sit here and I go, why not just draft Joe Burrow with the first overall pick and then let him sit behind Andy Dalton? Let Andy Dalton get beat up. Let Burrow learn. They're not going to do that.
No, they're not going to do that. They can't do that.
I know, because of the money.
And, well, the money and the fact that they have to put butts in seats in Cincinnati. And
Burrow will do that.
That city despises Andy Dalton. They are done with him.
That city despises a lot of things, though, Ryan. I know that's your hometown.
Well, you know, you get angry about a lot of things. There haven't been a whole lot of positive things in sports in that city. So, yes, there is a lot of times a glass half empty approach in that town.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Quickly, your thoughts on what Jordan had to say about Tua.
I'm not surprised. It's interesting to hear what Jordan Rodgers has to say about Tua versus what Trent Dilfer has to say about Tua. Because if you listen to Trent Dilfer talk about Tua like he did Friday afternoon with Jared and the GM, which was a phenomenal conversation between two football people, between Floyd and Trent, Trent cannot say enough good things about Tua. And if you listen to Trent, you feel like Tua is going to be the next big thing in the National Football League. You listen to Jordan, and Jordan has concerns. Tua probably ends up in between there, but a lot of his success is going to be based on how healthy he can be. And you referenced the ESPN.com article where some experts made comparisons for certain NFL draft prospects. Todd McShay compared Tua to Drew Brees, and I'm scrolling down here, an executive in the NFC compared Tua to Russell Wilson. So those are two really good comparisons, and if he stays healthy, I would not be surprised at all to see Tua maximize that kind of potential. I think Tua's ceiling is higher than Joe Burrow's ceiling.
Do you? I mean, look, I don't know if I necessarily disagree with that, and that is the big debate going on, you know, with those two. But I'm just curious about this quarterback class in general. You know, will Jalen Hurts shock everybody and be, you know, be that? A lot of people have him in the second round, but will he be successful? That's the big question. Jordan Love is one of those. Is he a dark horse that, you know, will come in and really shock people? But you think Tua has more upside than Joe Burrow? I don't know if I disagree.
Mm-hmm. I do. I don't think he's as much of a slam dunk in the NFL as Joe Burrow might be just because of the injury history.
Yeah, and that's going to be the concern with people. When we come back, Yannick Ngakoue, well, he tweeted his boss. We will discuss that when we come back. The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Game Nashville is your NFL draft home for the much-anticipated event starting on Thursday, April 23rd. Tune into ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9 for all of our coverage. Presented by Wyatt Johnson Ford, your Nashville Ford dealership. A little Prince bringing us back 4 years ago today. Gone way too soon. Welcome back in to The Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and Ryan Porth hanging out. Marquise Munson is at the Wholesale Link studio powered by RumbleOn.com. So did you see this yesterday? The gloves are officially off. That's what the byline reads from Michael DeRocco. From ESPN, Yannick Ngakoue basically tweeting hashtag free Yan, and then tags at Tony Khan, who is of course one of the owners or is the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Stop hiding. Tony Khan replies with, "I'm not hiding, sir. I'm in isolation, getting ready for the draft. I've been pretty active on social media in isolation, but you would know since you unfollowed me again." They have this back and forth on Twitter. Tony Khan, the son of Shad Khan, tweeting back and forth with Yannick Ngakoue. They got to move on from him, right? This is not going to work. He wants to be out, and now you have all this, the back and forth with the owner. It's time to move on.
If you're a team, though, are you jumping for joy at the prospect of getting Yannick Ngakoue?
That's a good point. You're not going to give up a lot to get him.
Here's the thing. At the end of the day in the National Football League, talent rules over almost anything else. We saw that with Antonio Brown until it got to a point where that was not the case. But, I mean, there's got to be some baggage here with Yannick Ngakoue, even though, I mean, in his first 4 years, he has 37.5 sacks. There's no question that Ngakoue is a difference maker when it comes to being a pass rusher. I will say, though, if I'm a team, I'm not loving the fact that he's calling out the owner's son on Twitter. I'm not I don't love how that looks. I just don't.
Yeah, but go ahead.
But at the end of the day, I think we're going to see movement on Ngakoue. I think we're going to see movement on Clowney. I think we're going to see movement on Logan Ryan after the draft. You know, maybe with everything looking a little better with COVID-19, that team facilities can start opening up on select cases, and they can get some physicals done that can determine whether teams will sign players or not. And, you know, with teams, with the musical chairs game of finding a pass rusher, if teams are on the outside looking in and want Ngakoue, then they're probably going to be more apt to trade for him after the draft than any time before then.
Yeah, and I do believe somebody will. I mean, sure. I hear what you're saying, and you're right, but I just think, and this could be the wrong way to look at it, and the unfortunate part, but it's just today's NFL. You have a lot of players that are that way, and they have the avenue and Twitter and social media to go out and be vocal. That's their personality anyway, and I just think that these teams have just learned to deal with it. And unfortunately, that's just what it is. And the hope is that if you get a player that – you find a player like Ngakoue that is not happy in his current situation, so therefore he's lashing out and he's on Twitter and he's calling out the owner's son and all that stuff, your hope is that you acquire him, he is happy, he goes to a team where you know that he is going to be happy, and then you get the performance on the field and it's all done. That's the gamble, but that's what these teams are going to be looking for, and so we'll see. I think he gets moved. It may not be during the draft, but I think it'll be shortly thereafter if it's not during the draft. So
sure,
we will find out. Jadeveon Clowney, you brought him up. John Robinson was actually asked about him yesterday during the press conference. It seems like things are not really moving, but the door is still open.
Like with anything, you have to have a couple scenarios mapped out. And, you know, I would say that, and I talked about it last week with a couple of the TV spots, that, you know, we haven't closed the door on anything, but I would say that we really haven't inched closer to having any finality to that either. I mean, he's obviously a good football player. And I think where we're at, depending upon who we pick, could potentially impact that. But I would say it doesn't close the door on it completely either. Again, like I said last week, you don't ever close the door on the, you know, potentially adding good football players to your team. So we'll just kind of take it how it goes, and probably circle back with that one here this week or next week once the draft's over.
Translation. Yeah, we gave you an offer. You haven't accepted it yet. So we have plan B, C, and D. And if, you know, those don't pan out, then we'll circle back around. But we're not going to sit around and wait on you.
The other translation that I would pick up on that clip from John Robinson is basically him saying it depends on who we pick. And I would have to think that if they get a pass rusher in the first or second round, then that might end up closing the door on Clowney. But if they get a pass rusher in the fourth or fifth round, someone that isn't as much of a slam dunk in the short term, then Clowney becomes more of an option.
Yeah, I do believe when this draft is done, the door will officially be closed on either Jadeveon Clowney or Logan Ryan, and potentially both. I think, but definitely one of the two, because they're going to have to address it. The plan was always going to be if they got one, they had to address the other in the draft, and so now you're not going to have either one of them signed, in my opinion, before Thursday. So you go into the draft, you find the best players available that fit your needs, and that's what they're going to do. And then once they evaluate, you know, they might look at it as, okay, well, we've addressed corner, so we appreciate Logan Ryan's time the last 3 years, but we're out. That's kind of what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, and it's so important. Floyd has been beating this drum in the last couple weeks of it's so important in today's NFL of having three starting corners. And it's kind of evolved from just two to needing three with today's NFL. And Floyd sounds open to putting Malcolm Butler in the slot and having a draft pick be on the outside, on the other side of Adore Jackson.
Well, we will see. I do believe that if they pick at 29, they're going corner. That's just my gut, but that's where I stand.
I'm not totally sold on corner at 29. I'm not. If there's a good pass rusher there, I've been beating that drum forever. Would not be surprised to see them go that route.
We might have to do a fun little wager on that.
Okay.
For Thursday's draft. We might even have a mock draft. Who knows how this is going to shake out. Mm. Real quick, as we wrap this up, Darren Donovan Chase coming up. Prince, as I mentioned 4 years ago today, passing away. Marquise, I know you had an answer for this, but the Prince of sports, the GOAT, because he's one of the GOATs in music. He might be the GOAT, depending on who you ask. So who would you say is the Prince of sports?
Easy. Whatever you think, whoever you think is the number one option, it's usually, so if you think MJ is the best of all time, MJ would be Michael Jackson, and so then LeBron would be Prince. So same thing for Tom Brady. If you think Tom Brady's the best, then that's Michael Jackson. If you think Prince is the best, then, you know, it's Peyton Manning. So
I'm going
whatever's on the other side. It's whatever's on the other side, because there's always the debate between Michael Jackson and Prince.
How about Magic Johnson? Magic Johnson with some flair, Prince with some flair.
Yeah, but you got to go GOAT. Like, I mean, greatest of all time.
Well, great. Well, Magic Johnson is one of the GOATs.
But it's whatever your argument is. So if you have an argument between these two players, the player that you think is the best is going to be Michael Jackson, and the player that's second, who could also be the first, is going to be Prince. Because there's always that debate. Depending on who you talk to, a lot of people like Prince more than they like Michael Jackson.
I have a feeling this debate might come up in over the next 4 hours, because we know that Prince will definitely be brought up. That's going to do it for the Rundown. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson. We're back at it tomorrow at 9 a.m. on ESPN 1025 The Game.